This podcast is part of the Democracy Group.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. We are talking politics and religion without killing each other. I am your host, Corey Nathan, and it is an honor to be a part of the Democracy Group, a network of podcasts that examines what's broken in our democracy and how we can work together to fix it. Remember to subscribe or follow depending on your app, and definitely leave a good rating and write that review. The reviews, as I've been mentioning, really do help. Like the one we got from Healy Guy. I don't know if that's how you say the name, but it's H-E-L-I. So I'll just say Healy Guy. Healy Guy says, excellent, 5 stars. Corey does a great job interviewing and keeping the conversations interesting. Top notch. Thank you, Healy Guy. That's what we try to do. So thank you. And we got this from Rick Fit, the strong yogi. Rick Fit says, easy to listen to. My left of center kind loves to wander to the right, but it's challenging to find a conversation that isn't offensive. This show is an authentic dialogue about far-reaching issues from a relevant perspective. It's very compelling and comforting to hear intelligent people having friendly interactions about real issues. That's awesome. Rick is actually somebody I know. So it's really it's great to get this kind of feedback from folks that I have been in conversation with. What's interesting and encouraging is that Rick knows he's to the left of me on any number of issues. So I'm glad this program is where he's found some good dialogue and has heard perspectives from folks that don't align completely with his own views. So again, thank you, Rick. It means a lot that you write in, especially because we do have some disagreements on particular issues and positions. But I also know Rick well enough to know he's a good man. He has a really interesting life story, and I have a ton of respect for the guy. So getting feedback from a person like that is especially meaningful. And in a way, that's what I wanted to talk about today. That is, I am not the left, and I sure as hell ain't any kind of MAGA. No, I am a French Davidian. So what am I talking about? Why is it important to make that distinction? And what the heck is a French Davidian? So I guess I'll just start with, I am not the left. I'm not the left. I ain't any kind of MAGA. I'm a French Davidian. I'll start with, I'm not the left. I am frequently labeled by friends in a certain ecosystem, in a certain part of our culture. I'm often labeled as being the left. It's worth addressing this to correct the record, to kind of analyze why that's happening, why someone would feel the need to label anybody, let alone me, in the first place, and just start to take a closer look at this so that we can arrive at some, you know, better truth, some more accurate truth. So first of all, would there be anything wrong with being on the left? Absolutely not. Close relatives, close friends are left, progressive, Democrats, liberal, however you want to put it, some version thereof. If I would be accurately defined that way, really there's, I would own it. But it's kind of like somebody, if they were to say, well, Corey, since you're 6'5", you know, you have all of this, you have this experience. And then, you know, I don't know, maybe they'd say I have 6'5" privilege. And like, look, I'm 5'7" on a good day when the wind's blowing right. So it's okay. We could talk about that, but we first have to correct the record and say, I'm not 6'5". I'm 5'7". That's just a reality. That's just a fact. We got to deal with the world of facts. Okay. So you want to label me that way, especially to, I don't know, assign some blame and privilege and all this other stuff and make other assumptions. And I mean, that's where, like, we could play this game and pretend something is true that isn't true for whatever purposes. But once we start digging into the reality of it, why it's happening, what the other side of the argument is that they're trying to get to by labeling me a certain way, then we really do have to correct the record. That's why I'm going about this exercise. So like I said, am I on the left? Am I the left? The answer is no. So again, the question is, what is the distinction between my beliefs and those who are on the left? And the next question is, if I'm not the left, what am I? Where do I fall on the ideological spectrum? Where do any of us fall on the ideological spectrum? And we'll answer some of that. But first, why does this happen? And listen, I know it's the first, sometimes the most obvious answer is the answer. So yeah, the media that we're consuming is why this is happening. It's at least a huge reason. It's not just Fox News, not just MSNBC. It's not just social media. It's not just podcasts. It's all of it combined. And in some ways it's none of it, but it's what we're each curating for ourselves and how we're each responding to what we're consuming. And even if you have some friends who aren't politically engaged or religiously affiliated, it's still in the air. It's in our cultural bloodstream, if you will. So we're all no more than one step removed from someone who is watching, listening, reading political news and analysis. So whether you're consuming a lot of this stuff yourself or you're one step removed, a lot of folks just settle in at whatever station makes them feel comfortable, tickles their ears, if you will. They have certain TV stations, radio stations, websites, and other media that they like, and that's just where they go. So I think it's worth taking a look at what's going on out there. Why the left, you know, why is this happening? I'm not going to spend a ton of time scanning the entire media landscape, but since this is a podcast, we can take a look at some other podcasts to see what's happening in this medium. I've talked about guys like Dan Bongino, Mark Levin, Ben Shapiro, and some of those guys I have a lot less patience for than others, but like Ben Shapiro, that dude is capable of honestly some decent arguments and productive engagement. I've heard him and I tune into his show on a regular enough basis. He just spends too much time on the culture war stuff. So, I mean, that's why I'm not a regular listener. I only have so much patience for transphobia, for, you know, war on the supposed MSM, DEI, and I don't know, illegals. So anyway, just looking at some of the other top ranked shows, Tucker Carlson. Can we just talk about Tucker for a second? He was definitely, you know, everybody knows he was unceremoniously fired from Fox News, and he's had some missteps along the way since that time, like the failure to launch on Twitter, his fawning interview with Vladimir Putin that's actually not surprisingly being recycled over and over again by Vladimir Putin. But Tucker does have a huge audience, so I did want to look at what is on his plate. And, you know, a couple episodes ago, he had MTG, the inglorious MTG, Marjorie Taylor Greene. And I just can't get over how 1/435th of 1/2 of 1/3 of the federal government elected officials is being taken this seriously. Like good old Jewish space laser lady herself, the one who just said earthquakes and rain are all God's sign that Trump's got to win. Anyway, what does Marge have to talk about on Tucker's show? She joined the show to explain how Speaker Johnson is being blackmailed to do the bidding of the left. And she has the evidence to prove it. So, obviously I'm wondering if this evidence was dug up with Hugo Chavez's plans to steal the 2020 election and those Jewish space lasers and the East Coast hurricanes that elites, I don't know, manufactured. I don't know. It's obvious I'm being sarcastic, but, you know, according to Marjorie Taylor Greene, Speaker of the House Mike Johnson is either now part of the left or is being blackmailed by the left. Why? Because he realizes he needs some Democratic votes to get anything done. Because he has the temerity or engages in this supposedly traitorous act in Marge's eyes of actually speaking with his Democratic colleagues. So because of that, that guy is either now part of the left or is being blackmailed by them. That guy. This is the guy who led efforts in the House as a lawyer to overturn the 2020 election. The guy who's now a full-on apologist for insurrectionists when he does his media hits on Newsmax or wherever. This is the Mike Johnson she's talking about. But knowing as the speaker that he needs a vote or two from Democrats to get anything done, just that thought alone, giving credence to the possibility that, you know, that he has to get a vote from the quote unquote, the other side, the enemy, this puts him in traitorous territory in Marge's eyes. So, You know, the question I'm asking is, how broadly is the left being defined in an instance like this? And in this mindset, how bad is the left? How bad is how evil? Is it like the entirety of the left, as broadly as you're defining it? But I'll move on. Let's take we'll take a look at another one. One that we haven't talked about yet. There's Victor Davis Hanson. Maybe you've heard the name. Very popular podcaster, regular Fox News contributor. His Friday News Roundup on the podcast is titled "Removing Netanyahu, Gagging Trump, Killing Innocents. What won't the left tolerate? The left killing innocents."
Yes, Lord.
And we wonder why there's so much fear and animosity about the left. Or we can look at same pundit, his latest column on Fox News's website. So he contributes in a number of places, not just this podcast, but on Fox News itself. This was on the site. It was titled "11 Ways Biden and His Handlers Are Hellbent on Destroying America." So now they're destroying America. Leaving aside that if you go through the piece, it's just filled with straw man arguments, hyperbole. But what I find particularly pernicious about this sort of propaganda. It's the generalizations that anyone who's not sufficiently loyal to Trump, who doesn't come to his defense, and anyone who's not hateful enough of the left, well, you know, that makes you the left. If you don't hate the left enough, you must be the left. Continuing to move on, one more highly ranked show in the right, and I know some of my friends listen, is Louder with Crowder. It's Stephen Crowder. So just looking at a couple of his most recent episodes, there's one called "Why RFK Jr. is Right, Biden Worse Than Trump, Left Freaks Out." It just occurred to me, I think what they're doing with the titles is they're like, you know, and owning the libs algorithm. But that like mindset is just like, I don't know, maybe it does good SEO wise. I don't know. But if that's the algorithm, it's like one of the dumbest algorithms I've ever heard about. Anyway, so the left freaks out, you know, the left freaks out, really? Like the whole left? And who are we talking about here? Everyone who's not a Trump fan? The left? Like the whole thing? Everybody? Everyone who's not to your left, Steve? Stevie boy? Steven Crowder? Really, who are we talking about when we say the left? I got to know, because I know some of my friends listen to your show. And yeah, they say it's for entertainment, but they're listening. So let's look. When they tune into your show, what else are they going to be listening to or entertained by? The episode right before "The Left Freaks Out," we get to hear your episode titled "Is Easter Trans? Biden's War on Christianity." Biden's War on Christianity. I'm a Christian. Should I be afraid? What are we Christians going to do? How's Biden fighting a war on Christianity? I know. It's like that time that Biden rebranded the Bible and sold Biden Bibles for $59.99. Oh, wait, hold on. I think I got the wrong guy with that, right? Or no. It's the time he said, "I am the chosen one," as he looked up to the heavens. Oh, sorry. No. Wrong guy again, right? So, okay. Let me just slow down for a second. You can see it doesn't take much to see what's out there, what's the kind of content that's being sold, the kind of content that's being consumed by millions and millions and millions of people just in the podcast medium. We're not talking, I didn't even talk about broadcast or print or online. You know, I went beyond, you know, other shows that I've referred to. These are just three that I pulled up that are in top conservative podcasts. And these are literally just very, you know, the most recent episodes. So this is one of the reasons that you can understand that folks, friends of mine who listen to shows like this, that this is the mindset, these generalizations, mischaracterizations, and demonizations. It is the order of the day, basically. It's a whole business model. So why are folks drawn to that? Why do folks in conversations and relationships like the ones that I have, why do folks feel a need to do this, to say the left, you're the left, you're a liberal, you're a progressive, you're this, you're that? Why do we do that? So that we can put each other in boxes, so that we it's easier, that it's simpler, that we know what type of, I don't know, so we know how to fight each other, so we know what type of artillery to use, what arguments to make ourselves feel better, to make ourselves feel more righteous. Why the need to distill an entire human being, someone's entire life, down to a label? He's a Democrat. He's a liberal. Or, oh, that guy's a Trumpster. He's totally MAGA. Why do that? Especially when you're wrong. The bottom line for me and for others who find themselves being put in categories or labeled a certain way is whether all these examples of conflict entrepreneurs and the cultural toxins where they're constantly pounding their listeners and their readers with, the question is whether Dan Bongino's toxicity or Steven Crowder's or Victor Davis Hanson's hyperbole and their rage and their fear-based, their business model, do we allow them to define me or us and our views, even by proxy? Meaning, do I allow their effect and the cultural, like the ripple effects of this daily pounding, this daily swill, for it to disfigure and confuse who I am and what my views actually are? The answer is no. And it's not just about standing up for my own beliefs or my own image. It's about reintroducing a sense of truth, a sense of accuracy, a sense of humanity in all our complexities back, just bring it back into the system. You know, and it's just one little flicker. It's just one little, you know, my little corner of the world. But I think it's like a light. If you've ever seen a completely dark, dark room and then you light a match, that one little tiny light, it dominates the darkness. You can't, you know, it is one little light, but it still shines. So I know I'm in one little corner of the world and I have limited conversations. You know, my audience isn't as big as all these guys, the folks who are listening and engaging, you know, but it is one little corner of the world and it's worth standing up for truth in this little circle of influence and circle of relationships that I have. So I'm not the left, however much somebody wants to label me as 6'5" in the left. I'm not. And I sure as hell ain't MAGA. So I'm not the left and I sure as hell ain't MAGA. So what is MAGA? First, number one, it's not conservative. Let's just get that straight. You know, we don't have to go any further than the First Amendment. And the freedoms, we've talked about this in recent episodes. We'll talk about it some more in upcoming ones. The freedom of speech, the freedom of religion, the freedom of press, freedom of assembly, and the right to petition the government. MAGA, if you look at, so the lengthiest document that you can find right now is from Heritage Foundation. They're working on a document called Project 2025. And it is basically trying to articulate a set of policies to execute if Trump gets elected again, what's going to be happening. And it is explicit attacks against the basic freedoms, just not even going beyond the First Amendment. And we already saw things like this happening, like at Lafayette Square, clearing with force and violence protesters. We hear Trump talking about it. We hear Trump talking about arresting the press, arresting journalists who write things that he doesn't like. You know, we could flesh this out some more, which we will continue to do. But this is a very real thing. This is not hyperbole. We've seen the signs of this. You know, I mean, listen, he doesn't. So the other thing is, it's not conservative because there's no set of policies there. You know, just this morning on one of the news shows, Sarah Isger, his spokesperson for the in Trump's administration for the Justice Department, said it's hard to hold a through line on former president's policies because there are no set of policies. He's one thing one day and another thing another day, you know. So it's defined really around Trump. That's the defining principle. All politics is personal, as somebody else said on that same show. Or it's just like an anti-Trump thing. So if you're against Trump, then we're against you. That's all it is. So it's about Trump. Trump's continued aggrandizement, enrichment, grab for power, more power. That's what it is. It is about Trump. In that way, it's a cult of personality, a cult of Trump. And if there's any guiding principles, it's that, and it's anti-partisan. In other words, anybody who is against Trump in any way that's how we're going to define our policies. So it's a partisan-based set of policies. It doesn't have any coherence other than that. I did get someone wrote their argument for why they support Trump and why they're so passionately against Biden. So I thought it'd be, and listen, I thought it'd be worthwhile to read their argument and to engage with it. And this is what this person said. What he did in his term as president was truly amazing. If I hired individuals based on personality, past mistakes, or imperfections, I wouldn't be able to hire a soul. No one is perfect, but getting the job done, speaking on principles based on their platform, following through with what was promised, protecting our borders and the sovereignty of this nation, respected globally, thriving economy, public safety, utilizing our own natural resources, oil independence, support of our allies, no wars under their leadership, huge supporter of our military, police, veterans, America First, deregulations for small businesses, fair trade that benefited America. What we have now is frightening to say the least, and America is paying a heavy price for it. Forget media and SM, meaning social media. People need to do their own research and make a decisive decision. You hear the same repetitive talking points about Trump because his achievements can't be denied. And then she provided a link. And by the way, it should be noted that the link has a note at the top that says, this is historical material frozen in time. The website is no longer updated and links to external websites and some internal pages may not work. Meaning it's not up for debate. But too damn bad. I'm going to debate it. I mean, I appreciate that this person tried to articulate their reasoning, but this requires a level of, I'll just say it, like delusion. So let's just start right at the top. Individual, if I hired individuals based on personality, past mistakes, or imperfections, what came to mind is the someone going, other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how is the play? It's like imperfections. What are we talking about every single day? I've been saying this for years. His words, actions, and character. Every single day he provides examples of the, like, it's not imperfections. It's like the most anti-moral. It's not just amoral. It's not just immoral. It's anti-moral and brazenly so. Do you want me to give you examples? I'm not going to bother because it's just too damn easy. Speaking on principles. I already talked about this. She said he's speaking on principle. What principles exactly are those? That he wants to get richer, that he wants to, you know, overturn the election again, that he's going to, you know, suspend the Constitution for a day, be a dictator for a day. What principle are we talking about? What principles? That he's respected globally? Okay. I'm not even going to try to argue this myself. I'm just going to go to the people who were closest to him, the people he hired to head his departments in his administration, starting like Secretary of State, talking globally. What did Secretary of State Tillerson say? His first Secretary of State. We're in a worse place today than we were before he came in. This is what his own Secretary of State said. And he said Trump's understanding of global events was really limited. I mean, respected globally. Nikki Haley, his first UN ambassador. I mean, she's clearly not a fan. Once she started, you know, speaking candidly, she talked about Trump's bromance with Putin and all his love letters that he gets from Kim Jong-un. Oh, but she ran against him, so she was just campaigning. Okay, what about his national security advisor, national security, respected globally? What did he say? John Bolton, I have been in those rooms with him. When he met with those leaders, I believe they think he's a laughing fool. Oh, but that's just Tillerson. Oh, but that's just John Bolton. Oh, but that's just Haley. Oh, but that's just John Kelly. Oh, but that's just Jim Mattis. One after the other, his own freaking VP. His own VP is not supporting him. So he's respected globally. He's not even respected by the very people that he hired. Oh, I hire the best. Yeah. So I don't have to argue this. The very people that he hired who were in the room, they argued it for us. They can tell, they know better than me. They know better than you too. Protecting our borders, like building the wall and having Mexico pay for it. How's that working out for you? And thriving. Don't even get me started on the economy, because in order to make this argument, number one, there's a lot that you have to ignore. You have to ignore 2020 happened, and his lack of leadership led to tens, if not hundreds of thousands of more deaths than needed to happen. If there was any sort of decent, competent leadership during that time, it did not need to go the way it did for our lives as well as the economy. So even if I grant you that we're only measuring up until 2019, even if I grant you that, I still have to ignore the accomplishments of Biden's administration. As much as I have specific disagreements with him on fiscal policy, on foreign policy, you can't ignore, we can't just close our eyes and pretend that he hasn't had record level of unemployment numbers. Again, 300,000 jobs just last month. And no, it's not 3.5 or 4.5 years because we're not counting 2020. We can't still be attributing that to Trump's magical spell over the jobs, right? Unemployment, stock market at record highs. And no, I get that not everybody can afford to invest in the stock market, but it's just a way that we measure the larger economy, macroeconomic numbers. You know, it's or GDP growth. I still look at these things, at least avocationally, going back to my time as a stockbroker. 4.3 is a really healthy number from the third quarter of last year. 3.4 in the fourth quarter of last year, even if it's 2, which they're projecting for first quarter of this year. These are very, very healthy numbers, even if it slows down a little bit from the 4.3 and 3.4. This is very, very healthy growth, especially compared to the other advanced nations around the world, especially compared to all of the, you know, cliffs that we were supposed to be falling off of, you know, in 2021 and 2022 and 2023 and 20, you know, where is it? We're still adding jobs month after month after month and showing a growing economy, you know, and yeah, we can account for inflation, but that's because those of us who can account for complexity for different dynamics at work, we can acknowledge that inflation was partly due to putting extra money into the economy that maybe was excessive. And, you know, but I don't know, I'd rather have those types of policy debates based on reality, based on facts, instead of having to pretend that 2020 doesn't really count, instead of having to pretend that the economy didn't add 300,000 jobs, instead of having to pretend that things didn't happen that did happen or things did happen that didn't happen. I want to allow for reality and deal with the complexity of reality. Not this, like I said, delusion. Delusional is defined as characterized by or holding false beliefs or judgments about external reality that are held despite incontrovertible evidence to the contrary, typically as a symptom of a mental condition. There is a mental condition. And by the way, talk about projection. It's Trump derangement syndrome, but it's not those who hate Trump so much they can't see reality. It's people like this that aren't accounting for reality. That a huge supporter of military, police, and veterans, like the guys who are hospitalized and traumatized from what happened on January 6th, like those guys. Let's not pretend that things didn't happen that did happen. Okay, let's deal with reality. So clearly, you know, I'll just wrap this up. Clearly, I am not MAGA, and you know, the thing is, the reason I'm not MAGA is because I'm a conservative and because I'm a Christian. And yet conservatism as a term and Christianity as an identity have been hijacked by the most unchristian and least conservative of individuals we could have ever imagined. So I'm not the left. Obviously, I'm not MAGA. So what am I? I am a French Davidian. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't make light of Branch Davidians. It was a dark chapter at the first part of the Clinton presidency and American history, and it led to other tragedies. But I don't know. Too soon? I don't know. I'm a French Davidian. So I could have called it a Brooks Davidian. I could have said I'm a From Davidian, but French Davidian. Just more catchy, I guess. So what is it? It's about nuance. It's about principles. It's about honoring the complexity of our time, the complexity of the problems we face, and the complexity of each and every human being on an intellectual level, on a spiritual level, and how we engage with the world around us, and even on an emotional level. After all, my Bible still says in the Hebrew Bible and the New Testament, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Heart, soul, mind, and strength. I'm not sure if it says that in the Trump Bible, but it says it in my Bible. So why am I a big fan of somebody like David French? Not that I agree with him all the time, you know, and again, I'm joking about being in the, you know, the cult of David French, but just we'll take a look at a couple of his. We looked at, you know, these so-called conservative, really right-wing Trump MAGA media nuts. So we'll look at what David French has been writing about. He wrote one recent piece titled, "Israel is Making the Same Mistake America Made in Iraq." And one piece said, I'll just quote him at length here. He says, "Yes, Israel has the legal right and moral responsibility to end Hamas's reign in Gaza, but it's wrong to think the military mission and humanitarian mission are at odds with each other. One thing we learned in Iraq, if you fail the humanitarian mission, you will fail the military mission, also. Protect the population or you will lose over the long term." So he's holding space for a complex issue here. He's holding space for things that are intention, for ideas and priorities and values that are intention. Looking a little bit further, he wrote another piece called "Don't Let Our Broken Politics Mangle Our Faith." I read all of his stuff in that he writes for the New York Times, that he used to write for The Atlantic, and when he was with the Dispatch. This one was really meaningful. Obviously, as a Christian, it really hit home. Friends of other, you know, a couple different friends of mine sent it to me, but I already read it. He drives the point home at the end of this piece when he says, "When I think of Christian Visibility Day," so he's referring to the uproar, one of the shows I referenced before about Trans Visibility Day being on March 31st. It's on March 31st. It's been that way for a number of years. So there's this backlash, and Trump at one point said, "I'm going to make Election Day Christian Visibility Day." And French, you know, wisely, I think, said, he wound down by saying, "When I think of Christian Visibility Day, I have very different images in mind, you know, than the authoritarianism that," this is not in his piece, this is my commentary, that Trump, he brazenly, you know, talks about on a daily basis, or exhibited when he was president, or, you know, rallies, you know, he's supporting the kind of language that he's using at his rallies in increasingly. So French said, "When I think of Christian Visibility Day, I have very different images in mind of Christians on the Edmund Pettus Bridge marching for justice and responding to violence with peace, of Christians in Birmingham, Alabama, enduring the fire hoses and attack dogs in the name of justice and reconciliation. Or I can think of the ultimate Christian Visibility Day on a cross on a hill outside Jerusalem, when the Son of God faced the ultimate act of persecution, looked at the men who were murdering him and declared, 'Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do.'" Again, keeping, you know, these different values in tension with each other and contrast, like, you know, the idea that is the ultimate one, because there's this idea that, you know, Jesus, the Trump version, the MAGA version of Jesus, is taking over the Roman army and taking over the world by force, you know, with arms. And no, Trump's path to victory is through the cross. It's something that would be unrecognizable, you know, to Trump in his vision of it. So I this particularly resonated with me. One other piece I'll quote from on David French: "A conservative court rebukes Republican censorship." This one really strikes at the heart of what I was trying to get at today. Though he said, "Those who don't pay close attention to the right-wing civil war might miss the extent to which the political and legal wings of the conservative movement often find themselves on opposite sides. For example, classical liberal Federalist Society judges and justices have blocked the new right time and again from turning back Donald Trump's attempts to overturn the election, to halting red state attempts to implement college and corporate speech codes." I mean, that's nuance right there. That's, you know, and some of my more progressive friends don't appreciate that, because there's an allergy, understandable, albeit, but an allergy nonetheless to conservative justices and judges. But I appreciate the complexity of this. I appreciate that we can hold space for something more nuanced, something more with more competing values and virtues all in the same space, you know? And again, I could take several examples from pieces that David Brooks has written or David Frum has written, but I could also do the same with writers like Kathleen Parker and George Will of the Washington Post, or E.J. Dionne in the Post, or Peggy Noonan of the Wall Street Journal, or Danielle Allen, who we just had on this show. So the qualities that you can say characterize all the people I mentioned, and this is what I look for, as well as how I would identify myself, not as the left, not as MAGA. What I look for are writers, thinkers, and leaders who see people with different positions, not as enemies, but as another human being that we can learn from and possibly collaborate with and even explore our differences with the intent to arrive at a higher truth. I look for people who can hang in environments where their own views aren't the dominant ones. Like if a David French can hang with colleagues at the New York Times, you can be sure his views and beliefs have been tested by scrutiny. So I look for those who leave room for the possibility of changing, who know that evolving your beliefs and positions, it's not a sign of weakness or some sort of loss, but of being human and having the strength that comes with humility. And I definitely look for people who can hold space for the complexity of reality, that we could support Israel's right to exist while also having grave concerns with the way Netanyahu has executed this war, that we understand the tension reflected in the First Amendment that articulates both that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. It's both at the same time. And there are positive signs in the economy, like we were talking about before, while also recognizing that inflation has been felt by many people in this country. So I could go on. All that to say, to those who want to label me as part of the left, it has a lot less to do with the truth, a lot less to do with my actual philosophical political profile than it has to do with so many people just being a product of what they're listening to, reading, and watching, as well as this desire to simplify things, to reduce people down to one label for any number of reasons. But that's wrong, and it doesn't reflect what's actually true. So I know there's only so much that I can do about it, except to be clear with those who actually matter to me and to keep showing up and keep being clear and to try and be the, you know, one little light in the midst of all this chaos and all this darkness and all this confusion. But at the same time, being humble enough to know I'm not perfect. I also fall prey to these very same things, these very same toxins, if you will. It's in the air that we breathe, the cultural air that we breathe. So to those that think I'm in any way part of the MAGA movement, because I don't know, I'm a Christian or something, or I'm friends with and have conversations with people who are MAGA. If stuff like that makes me MAGA, I don't even know where to start. Maybe that'll be for a whole other, you know, topic. I'm going to have to think about that, though, because frankly, it doesn't happen as much. My liberal friends who know I'm more conservative, like in the Burkean or Paul Ryan sense of conservatism, most of them actually kind of like that I'm conservative in that way. And, you know, they accept me on my own terms. I'll just dig into that on a later podcast. So what it really comes down to is I am not the left. I sure as hell ain't MAGA. I am a French Davidian. So lastly, I'll just say, if you're still listening, let me know what you think. What I'm most interested in is how to do this whole thing better. I just don't want to give up on reaching across our differences, having healthier, more meaningful conversations with folks that aren't like me or have some different views from me. So I'll just wind it down there. As always, if you dig what we're doing here, remember to follow, rate, write that review. Write that review and tell a friend about Talk Politics and Religion Without Killing Each Other. We are easy to recommend. If you go to any app and just type in Without Killing Each Other, make sure you don't put in the G, Without Killing Each Other, that purple logo comes up. Or you can say Talking Politics without the G, Talking without the G, Politics, and a purple logo comes up. You can find us on any app, or you can find me online at Corey S. Nathan, at Corey, S as in Scott, Nathan, at Corey S. Nathan. Now go talk some politics and religion with gentleness and respect, and have a great week.